Hi, everyone, and welcome to the DevMar Debugged podcast, where experts from top companies all over the world share their insights on everything developer marketing. So in this episode, we're speaking to Katie Miller, developer marketing leader, about developer events and their importance, as well as how people can make the most of them. But before we dig into the topic of this episode, Katie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure thing. And it's great to be back on the podcast. I am Katie Miller, and I am currently an ambassador for the Developer Marketing Alliance. So a little plug for that incredible program, as well as a developer marketing leader currently advising and consulting with a couple of developer tool and platform startups. I've been a practitioner and leader in the developer marketing and program space for well over a decade now. And a big, big part of that time has been spent working on developer events, everything ranging from large brand tentpole events such as Dreamforce, Google I/O, Google Cloud Next, all the way to community-oriented meetups, sponsored events, and the like. So excited to share my experiences and hopefully give some guidance and perspective to those of you who are muddling through the experience of developer events, as well as working on building up your practice.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. And so I'll just start with the basics, I think. So what are developer events?
That is such a nuanced and important question. And I would say there's no one answer. I think the simplest is they are anything that connects together technical practitioners with a very specific intent in mind. And I realize that's an incredibly broad definition, but it could be anything from meetups where someone is giving a technical talk to a hackathon where there's a day-long or multi-day challenge that folks are engaging in. It could be an entire event unto itself, a full event with multiple tracks and sponsors and keynotes and so forth, or an element of a larger event. When I think of that, I think of something like Dreamforce, which is Salesforce's marquee brand event. And developers are a critical audience as part of that, but not necessarily the only audience. So it's actually thinking about what is the strategy and experience for an event within an event, if you will. Particularly in this day of virtual and hybrid events, it could also mean not only something that brings folks together in person, but also something that connects people together virtually, whether it be a live webinar or a virtual event, or in some cases, a hybrid event. And so it really is a marketing tactic, community tactic, an advocacy tactic, where the intent is to connect people together in real time to serve a particular purpose and meet their goals and meet your own company's goals.
I think that's a great explanation, really clear. And one thing you mentioned that I find really interesting is, you know, virtual, hybrid, in person. So, you know, 2020 might starting to feel a little bit ages away now, but, you know, not much time has passed since the pandemic. So have you seen a shift since then? Because obviously it became a lot more virtual, but since then, have there been more in-person events, or is it still very much a mix with a weight on virtual still?
That's a great question. And it's been a bit of a mix. I would say I've observed that most of the major developer brands have gone back to doing in-person events now. They may not yet be at the scale that they were pre-pandemic, or it may be that instead of doing one large central event, they're moving more to a distributed model geographically. So doing three or four events in major geographic hubs for their audiences. But I would say for the most part, for the large brand events, it seems like they are back online. What I have seen, though, is more for community-driven events. And I think that there's, I'll give a little bit of a nuance there. Different geographic locations are still finding it challenging to bring people together in person. And that is a combination of meetups, which might be very, very hyper local events driven by a locally based community, or what you see are their global organizations. There are global organizations around design, around DevOps, around programming languages. And in the past, normally what they've had is a couple of major events, and then they'll have a distributed series of events. And just, and this is purely anecdotal, but just seeing conversations on social media, it seems like there have been more challenges reinvigorating some of those regional events that these organizations try to host around the world. And that those haven't quite picked up in the way that they used to. Yeah, that's the landscape that I've observed and experienced.
No, for sure. And I think maybe perhaps I'm wrong as well, but a good reason for it could be obviously with virtual. It's so easy to connect people from all over the world, and it's, you know, helps save a lot more money just actually putting up events, you know, physically. And they're flexible, all that. But despite all that, in your opinion, do you believe that in-person events have a lot more benefits than virtual, or is it just sort of the same?
That's a great question. And I would say they serve slightly different purposes. You're absolutely right. The benefit of virtual is the global reach, the cost, especially at a time when companies are making reductions in budget, making reductions in force. It becomes more challenging for folks to justify being able to travel to an event for the sake of professional development. And one thing, and I know that I'm jumping ahead to tips and best practices, one thing that I found really effective is many of these events are actually starting to prepare letters that they put on their websites that are pitch it to your boss that give folks justification to help explain why it's so important for them to invest, how it'll invest in them as an employee, how it'll invest in their business by attending the event. So I thought that that was a really interesting strategy that I've actually seen crop up more and more. But I would say that virtual still has that benefit. It's even something as simple as it's interesting. I'm attending a virtual event tomorrow, and it's great because I don't have to worry about commuting to something. I can dial in right before one meeting starts. I can dial out and then hop right out to make dinner. And so for something that might only be an hour or two long, I still find personally an incredible amount of value in that because it does allow me to engage in things that I wouldn't otherwise be able to engage in. At the same time, though, I think really there have been valiant efforts in virtual event platform technology that really aspire to simulate the hallway talks to connect people together. And yet at the same time, though, I think when folks attend events virtually, it does tend to be a little bit more hop in, hop out. If there are certain sessions they're really engaged in, they will watch end to end and they will ask questions. But I found less and less that the virtual roundtables and coffee talks don't tend to be as well engaged. And that's where I do believe that there still is a really, really important place for in-person events. there's something to be said about taking that time to travel somewhere, to committing your full body and time and presence to being there for yourself and for your company and for the others that are in attendance. And I think as long as we're able to still continue to do those in really thoughtful and engaging ways, as well as in inclusive ways. And I'll talk later in best practices about inclusive events, but I think in this day and age, it's not just thinking about inclusivity around making sure folks feel a sense of belonging around attributes that we, you know, historically have thought about with, you know, identity and accessibility and so forth. But there are people who still are uncomfortable attending events for health and immunity reasons. And how may we think about making sure for folks who aren't super comfortable being unmasked yet, for example, that they still feel welcome and included in in-person events and can get the benefits of those and know that they're going to be safe and healthy and taken care of. Like, it's something that I think about a lot.
Well, that's great. And I think maybe a good solution could be, as you said, you know, having a mix. It seems like at the moment there is a mix. So people could choose to attend perhaps in person, but also attend virtual, and there's benefits to both. So
there are absolutely benefits to both for sure. And I really hope that we don't lose one or the other or prioritize one or the other. I think it's really thinking about what's the intention of having this particular event and what format will best serve the goals that we're trying to achieve of having this event.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was also going to ask you, and this segues quite nicely into that, what different types of developer events are there? Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure thing. When I ran the developer events program during my time in Google Cloud, we really thought of them along a number of dimensions. The most obvious was what we called first party and third party. So first party would be events that we would host as a brand, normally large tentpole events. So those would be things like Google I/O or Google Cloud Next. And the intent of those is really for a brand to pull together its community, its customers, its users, its partners, as well as prospects across all of those audiences. And in that case, it's really about how do we really showcase what's new. How do we make sure that folks feel a sense of connection and belonging to the brand and to each other? The next category would be third-party events, and that's where we would be sponsors or partners of some form within those events. And there's a massive range within that. Everything from some of those global distributed series of events, things like In the case of the cloud space, thinking about DevOps days or Pi days or something like that around different practices of development or different language affinity groups. So thinking about what are some of the geographic locations that are really, really important and worth investing in, and then thinking about how in a serial manner and in a scaled manner, we can make sure that we're investing in those events around the world. Then there are, within that, there are partner events. So for example, going into, when we were at Google Cloud, we would be present at events like NVIDIA's or, more trade shows and conferences, everything from supercomputing to some of the open source languages that we were heavily invested in. So a KubeCon event, which normally they had 2 to 3 globally. And so from the third party event perspective, it was really thinking about what is the value that our technology may be able to bring to that particular affinity group, to that particular practitioner group, and being really, really intentional about showing up where we were in terms of awareness and adoption within that particular community. And interestingly enough, at the Developer Marketing Summit this past week, Mike Stowe, who's at RingCentral, gave a fabulous presentation about developer event strategy and had a really, really good point that I felt so viscerally about showing up in the right way, which is if your product is new to a space and doesn't have a lot of awareness, not going in as the premier platinum sponsor of an event because people are so unaware of who you are and what you're doing, you're putting so much money and time and investment into being there, and people aren't ready to engage on the same level that you're present at. And so I thought that that was a great tip that I've practiced in the past and that Mike reinforced. So I would say that those are two main types, the way that we thought about them. And then there are elements within that. So for example, within both first party and third party, there are meetups, for example. Is it something that a brand that you are championing is putting on the events and how to think about being behind those, as well as thinking about ways to get into smaller meetups and communities as lightweight sponsors and speakers and things like that. And then there are different tactics, whether it be technical workshops, whether it be webinars, whether it be hackathons. Those are things that can stand on their own. Those are things that can be incorporated into first party events and third party events. They can be done virtual and in person. And so they are a type of event, and they can fit into both that first party and third party category.
Well, there's a lot. And it feels like they're also quite a lot, like very different. So how can someone go about just deciding, okay, I'll pick this, this is ideal for me or for my company, and this will actually help me? So I guess in essence, what is it, knowing what the events are good for, like understanding that first, and then going from there to decide which one will help them more?
Exactly. I think that that's absolutely spot on. So similar to any type of marketing strategy, an event is a tactic. It's a channel. It's and so if you think about a life cycle or journey that someone may go on, and admittedly, and this again is something that came up a lot in the Developer Marketing Summit this past week. So for those of you who are DMA members, my understanding is a lot of that content is going to be available soon for you to go back and visit and revisit. But that was something that came up a lot is the journey. And the journey is very non-straight, I think is what I'll say. It can take lots of paths. I think if I were to visualize it, it would be kind of a doodle or a squiggly line, just because there are so many entrance points and exit points depending on what somebody's trying to achieve. And so I really approach events as tactics. And so like any good marketing strategy where you're laying out to say, is this a new product to market? Is our brand not necessarily known and understood and recognized? Are we having trouble converting people from trying to getting to Hello World to implementing tech into their application? And thinking about what are the different types of content and experiences that one would provide to convert people at different stages of the funnel? And then thinking about what is the right type of event and what is the type what's the right type of presence at an event to meet each of those. So to walk through something concretely, one of the things that we really wanted to emphasize within the Kubernetes space, so this was when I was at Google Cloud, is that as a brand, we had a commercial solution that folks could buy. Similarly, we had a very, very strong presence within the open source community. And so it was really thinking through within that one event, how do we show up in a way that is both authentic to the open source community, where it isn't about selling, it's about making the technology better and building a really strong community, as well as making sure for all of the partners and prospects and customers that were there, that we could really authentically talk about what at the time was a relatively new commercial solution. And so the way that we approached it was having multiple sponsorship presences that we could really clearly define. One being we created a small stage and space that was all community submitted tech talks. And it was very much about best practices. There was nothing overtly branded within it. And then on the flip side, what we did is had a very intentionally sponsored branded space. And within that, because it was a relatively new solution, we made sure not to have it be a hard sell, but to have technical demos that our technical staff could walk through that would give attendees a sense of what the solution was and use it as an opportunity to prompt and provoke questions and follow-up conversations. So you see, within that, we hit on a bunch of different things. We hit on how to think about showing up authentically within an open source space where you don't want to be overly salesy and commercial, how to think about showing up within a space where you actually do want to be generating prospective leads and conversations, and yet you may not necessarily be far enough down the funnel for it to be a really, really direct and overt sale. You're still building up the awareness of a particular solution. So hopefully that gives a little bit more of concrete context to how to think about the different types of events and how to think about showing up and incorporating different types of events into your strategy.
Yeah, it really does. It makes it clear that it's important to kind of know before we go to an event or before you organize an event, the goal of it, what's the intention, who are we doing this for, or why are we attending, that people should have this clear before they invest, time, resources into it. So really good.
Absolutely. And you said something really important there, which is it's really easy to fall into the trap of saying, brand X has an event, community Y has an event, maybe that's something that we should be doing. And if your own community isn't there yet, if your own user base and audience isn't there yet, it can be a really, really expensive endeavor. And so that's where it is important to be grounded in understanding what is your brand awareness, where are you in building up community, and then thinking about if you do want to be connecting with developers in person, and it's not quite the time for you to be hosting your own event, what are some of those sponsorship opportunities that can start to build up that awareness in like-minded groups of developers?
No, for sure. I think that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. And well, we've touched on, benefits of developer events and why people should, consider them and how to best think about them. But what about challenges? In your opinion, what would you say were the most challenging aspects of developer events? Is it, if you're doing something that's a bit more, developer focused or, tech heavy, the infrastructure needs to be on point, budgets are a big consideration. So what would you say is the most, the big hurdles of it?
That's a great question. I've hit upon some of them, which, and I've learned this from my own experience. Somebody coming and saying, we have to be at this event. This event is very important. Mm. And then not showing up in the right way, almost over-sponsoring, if you will. I remember running labs at an event that was a brand new audience and space for our brand. And folks didn't know enough. It was premature. They were coming up and being like, why are you here? And we're like, take our lab. And they're like, but I don't understand why you're here. Like, we made assumptions about our awareness that were wrong. And so I think that is, and I'd mentioned this a little earlier, I think it's a really easy trap to fall into of seeing what's possible on the horizon and jumping too quickly in versus thinking about what's the right way to be present here that matches the audience where they're at with their awareness and understanding and adoption of the technology. Yeah. I think the second is, and I've seen movement and momentum around this in the last few years. And to be honest, I think a lot of scrutiny around budget and reductions in budget and force has been a forcing function, but it's justifying through goals and measurement being at an event, particularly around community events and open source events, which, like I said, are intentionally not intended to drive leads. The audience will see right through you if you go and try and sell at those events. And yet at the same time, a company's going to say, why are we spending X amount of money being there? And it's harder and harder, even if we intuitively know this is a valuable community. We need to be present in this community. If this community knows and understands and trusts us, it's going to have positive effects down the line. And yet, if we're not able to come back, even from a small sponsorship, explaining why that event was important, that makes it harder and harder to justify that budget down the line. And so I would say a second challenge is thinking through a thoughtful, meaningful measurement, goal setting and measurement rubric that will resonate with the keepers of the budget and the business strategy. So to be able to come back and say, this was the impact of this event, or this was the impact of investing in this series of events. There are absolutely ways to do it, but it definitely takes it takes a lot of internal relationship building to get everything from developer advocates to feel confident that with the measurement strategy and the data that's being collected and the trip report writing and so forth, to having really strong relationships with marketing operations and whomever manages lead intake and CRM systems and things like that. So I would say measurement is definitely one. And then I think the third is really how to... It's that old adage of you can't market to developers. And I think and I think we all know that's not true. It's just being really thoughtful and intentional. And so it's how to think about creating events that are inspiring and engaging and delightful and that truly reflect and represent the audience. And so it's absolutely possible to do, but events can be really expensive and time consuming. And so if there is a place to really think about investing in deeply understanding your audience and coming up with content and experiences that reflects that understanding of the audience, events are absolutely a place that needs to be done simply because of the number of hours they take to produce and the costs that they take to produce.
Yeah, absolutely. Not understanding exactly who the audience is and if they are interested in an event like event X, Y, you know, it doesn't matter. It will come at a cost for sure. And I think, you know, that's quite interesting because it can connect as well, at least in terms of budget, with what we were discussing before about, you know, in-person events could be quite pricey, but perhaps a good compromise could be virtual. So again, another tick for that, I think.
But yeah, we also starting to get into, I think, which you touched on, tips and best practices. So, you know, I would ask you if there's any absolutely, you know, essentials or must-haves for anyone wanting to attend or organize a developer event, you know, something like Schwag. I think that's a great topic to start.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so funny. I'll dig into Schwag in a second, but as I was preparing for the podcast, a few years ago, I think this was back in 2018, I had actually written a chapter on developer events for a book that Slash Data had published. They have a guide to developer marketing and relations. And so I dusted off my copy of the book and flipped through it to see whether or not over the last 5 years, which have been really transformative in a lot of ways between the pandemic and economic up and downs, whether or not any of my recommendations had actually changed kind of at an existential level. And the interesting thing is, I don't think that they had. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's some really tried and true foundational things for events that I would say stand the test of some time passing. But to dig into Schwag specifically, and again, this is where, you know, I love the developer marketing community because it's a space where we can have like meaningful conversations and debate is, at the event last week, there were varied opinions on Schwag. Some folks were 100% all in, some folks were absolutely not. And some were kind of more nuanced in the middle and saying, what is the behavior that you're trying to drive? And, how does the outcome at the end match the behavior that you're trying to drive? And I think I probably fall into that camp, which is it depends, is, you know, when we thought about Schwag, because, you know, when I was leading the developer events team, we had a program manager who was responsible for our Schwag program and being really thoughtful and intentional around it. And the approach that we really took to it was, making sure that there was utility in it, particularly in an effort to try and minimize or reduce waste. Mm-hmm. Is this something someone is actually going to use? For example, there was a time where stickers, which I think all of us probably gravitate towards the most, were somewhat frowned upon because they had paper backs on them and they just ended up creating a lot of waste, or they would get stuck places they couldn't easily be removed and things like that. You know, kind of unintended consequences that we don't necessarily think about, but really trying to think intentionally about the items that, that we would distribute and when and how and why we were distributing them. Was it somebody comes up to a booth and gets a badge scan? Was it thanks and gratitude to a community of experts and leaders that we wanted to show thanks and recognition to for the ways that they were furthering our technology and co-creating our programs with us? Was it gratitude for having invested in a learning experience with us? And so we really tried to think about those intentional about, is this something that somebody is going to take home and have on their desk or use on a regular basis? Or is this something that is going to collect dust in a box and then eventually someone's going to pack up their office and say, what do I do with this thing? And so we really tried to be on the former side. And I think the other thing that we take for granted is that there can be legal nuances to the distribution of items as well, particularly if it gets into anything that would imply it being a contest or a raffle or a giveaway. And those rules vary from geographic location to geographic location. And so that's another thing that I like to plug, is not to take for granted that what seems like a really lovely idea of distributing something could actually be more nuanced and complex than one thinks. So this is just a plug for if you're not sure, always check with your legal team.
I think that is such a good thing to really consider. It's not something I've considered, but it makes so much sense. Obviously, if you want to distribute in a different area, different country, different types of events as well, so different cultures. So very, very interesting point that you just made. And I also love what you said about being, trying to be as functional as possible. How many times I've attended events and it's lovely, I grab a tote bag and then I feel it, but a lot of things end up not being used. That is true. You can gravitate towards pens and stuff, but those will get used. But that's such a good point. So I love that.
I'm curious. I'll share some of my favorites, but I'm curious what some of your items, like when you look back and you're like, oh, I'm still using that thing. What are the things that you're still using from events?
Stress balls. I do like them. I know they're so good. When you're just working, you just have something to kind of, or even just reading something, and it feels so good just to have something tactile to just, it might be me, but I love that. Notebooks, anything I can write on. I would say that and pens, those three are perhaps what I use the most.
Yeah, that's great. I think for me, the ones that have come out as winners are glass cleaners, like glasses cleaners, like little wipes. Mm. I always seem to need to clean my glasses when I don't have a wipe handy. And so I have a couple from 4, 5, 6 years ago that I still am in love with. Hand sanitizer. This is even pre-COVID. You shake a lot of hands at events. And so having hand sanitizer close by, it was always a really good one. And I think the third is a reusable coffee mug. This is something that I got at a developer marketing event a few years ago, and it was absolutely perfect. It was the right size for my car's cup holder and was just so useful. And yes, I am a total sucker for stickers. My laptop is loaded with stickers. And so that's always a good one as well. But those were some that I was really pleased with. And the swag leader that I had mentioned earlier, pre-pandemic, we were starting to look into things like reusable drinking straws and packs of silverware and things like that. Again, with that eye towards, when you're traveling and you're just so over drinking with a straw that's going to disintegrate, even though you know it's the right thing to do. What are some of those things that are easy to carry, easy to clean, compact, that just help reduce waste as well?
I love that. I love your picks as well. That is very true. A good mug, you can't go wrong with that. And it's the fact that you're considering, waste and the planet. And that for me really, really speaks to me as well. I really think it's so important, especially nowadays, that it is a focus of a lot of companies. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
And it's one of the, I'll call it out to a certain degree. It is one of the biggest challenges and dare I say hypocrisies of a lot of the in-person events, which is why seeing some companies moving to more of a distributed geographic model is nice, because again, it's kind of the travel footprint, but it is one of those real challenges of bringing people together means building up a physical space and how to think about the materials that go into building it. And I know that there are real pros and cons from a cost perspective of reusing materials from events versus building up and tearing down everything from, you think about, oh, it's great, we're going to build this booth and it's going to be a booth in a box and we're going to be able to reuse it. And then you think about storage costs and you think about the transportation costs of moving that from place to place and what the carbon emissions is of moving a thing from place to place, particularly you know, how often can you do it before it gets damaged and you need to start all over? As well as, and this is one of those fun challenges. I feel like I'm hopefully planting the seeds for people who are like, I'm going to build a thing and ship it around the world, is getting things through customs in different countries and how hard that is. And so there are real trade-offs for those things. And again, that is one of those plugs for balancing a combination of virtual events and in-person events, is in-person events do have an impact. At the same time, though, there is nothing to be said about, there's nothing better than coming together in person. And so I think it's, you know, I know one of the things we talked about is how things have changed and what I've seen change. And this is more my own perspective and guidance, is the importance of that balance, particularly if you're working for a brand or an organization that is thinking about their impact on the earth, is it isn't to go fully virtual. It isn't to go fully in person. It's just to be very intentional about those things, because there are trade-offs for both.
Yeah, absolutely. And if someone's, you know, dead set on doing an in-person event, of course, you know, networking with people, meeting people face-to-face, it is great. So I think I completely agree that it's just a lot of thinking should go into it before you do it. Doesn't mean, oh, don't do it. So that's a really good point and distinction to make. Yeah,
exactly.
And do you have any other tips you'd like to give our listeners so they can, you know, better create and host a good developer event?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I was flipping back through my notes, and I was like, what would I still advise and what's changed? Mm. And I think the thing that probably has changed over the last 5 years is, I would say twofold. And I've mentioned both of these. One is that there are folks who are still wary of traveling for health reasons, and making sure to understand and acknowledge that not everybody in your community is going to be ready to come back in person, or if they are, they're going to hope for particular protocols in place. And so that's one change to keep in mind. And then I think the second is more than ever, understanding the footprint of building an event, having people travel to events. I think that those things were there 5 years ago, and they're just much more prominent now. But a lot of them are tips that have kind of been strewn throughout, which is making sure that these events aren't explicitly about selling, that they are about building relationships, that they are about building trust, and that the spaces that you create, the people that you bring together in those events, are about trust and relationship building. The second is really about inclusivity and belonging. And it's something that sadly I feel like has been on the chopping block for events since coming back from COVID. It was something that I saw a lot of brands working towards very intentionally in the lead up to 2020, everything from something as simple as pronoun stickers. One event actually had stickers with different colors or different lanyards that indicated whether or not someone felt comfortable being approached for a conversation. So really that intentionality around neurodiversity within the community, as well as people's social engagement preferences. All of those things upwards to making sure that there were community events and spaces for different affinity groups so that they could connect with one another. Intentionality around images and pictures and language and decks and presentation, what the speaker lineup looked like, as well as in social events. Is there a broad range of food and drink available? Is this a really, really noisy event, or are there quieter spaces for folks to go to who like to socialize and engage in different ways? Is this an accessible event? Most venues will have requirements for those things out of the gate. But if you're building a booth, if somebody comes up to a booth who is in a wheelchair. Are they going to be able to comfortably engage in a demo or an experience? And again, in the United States, there are ADA guidelines and requirements and so forth, but really thinking about accessibility with virtual content, are there captions in place on the platform so that if somebody needs captions to assist them in engaging with content, they're going to be able to engage in that content. So, and then, like I said as well, really thinking through folks who are still not 100% comfortable from a health perspective, being in a space, what are the type of things that you're doing there? So I think keeping those things top of mind, and not all of those things around inclusivity cost a lot of money. Some of the accessibility does, and yet at the same time, I feel like it's so, so important. But ordering pronoun stickers isn't necessarily a huge budget hit. Making sure that you review your decks and your speaker lineup, those aren't huge budget hits. And so there are really important things that you can do. You know, as someone who is a mother in tech, making sure that there's a place if a woman is still feeding their child that they can pump comfortably. If somebody is religiously observant or meditates, making sure that there's a quiet space that they can go to do those things at the event that is not the floor of a bathroom. And so again, those things don't necessarily cost a lot of money, and yet they make such a huge difference in terms of the quality of experience somebody has an event.
Well, that's such a good point. Again, I completely agree. You know, even something as simple as a dietary, as you were saying, you know, dietary requirements, taking that into consideration, it might seem small, but for people who are attending, it makes a huge difference. And in terms of, you know, future turnout as well, if someone knows the event is inclusive, they're more likely to return, you know, so it can help as well with, well, with the audience, with making an impact on people. So it helps them as well, basically. You're helping other people, but you're helping yourself.
Exactly. And this is also a sad but important thing to call out, is also thinking about the geographic location of your event and who you want to feel welcome there. That there are certain places that some folks will not travel to because they don't feel safe traveling there. Mm. And so really being intentional and keeping that in mind. There is a move, and this may be US specific, of conferences pulling out of certain locations if they don't believe that they can allow everyone to feel safe and included at the event. And that may be a provocative comment to make, and yet it's really, really important to keep that in mind if there are really, really important and valuable members of your community that you want to have present and feel comfortable being present at your events.
Absolutely. It definitely needs to be talked about. And I think that's a really good thing, because you are thinking about, you know, the people and being inclusive to everyone. So I can't see that as a, you know, a negative. So for sure. Thank you for sharing that. And do you have any final thoughts, or, you know, any advice or anything you'd like to add to finish our talk?
Sure thing. There are a lot of extraordinary developer event practitioners. And I think tips that I would leave you with are to engage with content from some of these practitioners. If you, especially with events that have a virtual and in-person component, sign up and tune in to the keynotes from some of these events. Even if you have it on one screen while you're doing your work, learn from some of these events. See how they're putting together their speaker lineup. See how they're putting together their brand and their content and stuff like that. There's a huge amount that can be gleaned and learned from engaging in these events. I mean, for goodness sakes, like, even if I'm going to an event for something completely outside the developer relations or developer marketing space, I constantly have an eye towards How are they thinking about the room layout? How are they thinking about the check-in process and flow? Mm-hmm. Whether that be events that I attend for work that I do in education, I'm a competitive runner, so I think about the event experience of the road races that I participate in and what I can learn from and carry forward to the developer events I do. So we're all attending events, even if they're not professional events or technical events. And so just become an observer in any event experience that you're having. And then I would say, just remember the audience, that it's remember the audience and remember the intention of the event. And I think if you, like any good marketing practice, are doing the event with intentionality towards a goal and really keeping at the center who you're engaging with and why, it'll drive you to do the right thing for that event and be able to report out afterward that it was an effective and impactful experience.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Katie. I absolutely love what you just said again. And I really thank you for, you know, speaking about such an important topic as events and developer events specifically. So it was great to have you.
Yeah, this was lovely. It is always a pleasure to chat with you. And like I said, to pay forward the good, the bad, and the ugly that I've learned from my career, hoping it can make a difference to someone who's listening.
Oh, for sure it will. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of DevMar Debugged. If you want to hear more from professionals in the developer marketing world, subscribe to our podcast for more expert talks. See you on the next one.